I know you never would forget this, but of course, the Bengals Beat podcast, sponsored by our good friends down at 50 West Brewing Company, owner Bobby Slattery, Optimistic Bobby, to all of us on the BBP, has all kinds of delicious beers. Of course, you can go down to the Pro Works or the Brew Pub and drink them fresh down there, or you can just head over to Kroger if you're local here in Cincinnati, Northern Kentucky. Four different cans they have now on the shelves. Pick them up. You've got Punch You in the IPA. You've got their delicious American Lager. You've got Coast to Coast IPA. And, of course, Doom Pedal, which is the favorite of my good buddy on the That's So Cincinnati podcast, Jason Williams. I'm with him on that, except I'm a Coast to Coast guy. Either way, you go into Kroger, you pick them up, you got cans, you sit back, crack them. You can watch the draft. You can watch the games. You can watch any other thing that's going on with the Bengals while you have some delicious 50 West beer. Hope you all enjoy their beer and enjoy our podcast. Head on down to 50 West, where every beer is a journey. Come join for the ride. Welcome into the BBP. This is the Cincinnati Inquirer's Bengals Beat podcast, sponsored by 50 West Brewing Company. Every week, your Bengals beat writers Paul Danner Jr. and Fletcher Page take you inside Paul Brown Stadium. We're plugged into the club from the front office to the field. Win or lose, hiring or firing, we're always here to keep you in the loop. Let's go. All right, welcome into the latest edition of the BBP. That's right, it's the Bengals Beat podcast, presented by your good friends, makers of delicious beer and good times, 50 West Brewing Company. We, Fletcher Page, are in Indianapolis. Are you happy to be in Indianapolis?
I'm stoked.
Are you?
Yeah. It's my first time at the Combine.
Yeah. Your first experience of the Indiana Convention Center?
Yeah, I've heard the word or the phrase filtering up about 500 times so far. That so far has been the theme of this Combine for me.
What filtered up for you?
For me?
Why is everything filtering up?
It's these new college offenses.
It's all filtering up.
Really, it starts at the high school level, if we really want to get to the heart of the matter.
That's why Doug Rosfeld's here.
That's right.
Yeah.
he's filtered his way up.
He has filtered his way up. He's here by Zach Taylor's side. We got a lot to get to here from Indy. Good opportunity to talk with a number of different Bengals types over the last couple of days, specifically and very much front and center, Duke Tobin and Zach Taylor, who were at the podium. On Wednesday, we spoke with offensive coordinator Brian Callahan for a long time and also new offensive line coach Jim Turner. We were able to meet and talk to you for the first time. So a lot to get to, because the Bengals had a storyline thrown in their face on the way up here, and that was John Ross. And so we have to talk a lot about that, because the report and the Bengals' reaction to the report were fairly interesting, entertaining, and clear. They were clear
emphatic.
Communicators.
Emphatic.
Yeah. That's been the claim. Zach Taylor says he wants clear communicators, and there is no doubt about how well they are communicating about John Ross as this person is rolling in a is that a scissor lift?
It is. We're broadcasting from the middle of a convention center, and
you know what happens in convention centers? People casually stroll down long hallways on loud scissor lifts.
Well, there's a lot going on around here. There's a health convention.
There's some sort of very specific mall walking, potentially Secret Service technique happening.
I think it's a social experiment.
To see how long until we lose our minds.
Yeah, there's people that keep walking by us they're walking a very defined path around the walls of this convention center.
And we're in a corner, and so when they come look right at us into a corner that's
they
a dead
veer
end,
off at the last
you
minute.
Start to wonder, are we about to be attacked?
Maybe they think we're a social
experiment.
Maybe
they think we can help them acquire John Ross, is what they think.
Listen, on that, I'm going to rank that one up. Sometimes reports come out from the national level where you're kind of like, I'm going to put this John Ross one in. Marvin's going into the woods category because you're like, there's no way. Because obviously, if you look at the financial situation with a first-round draft pick still on his rookie deal, it's very difficult to make that work out financially between two teams. That's just from the jump.
Not to mention trying to trade someone whose value has never been lower.
Right.
I mean, you're not going to – you're trying to trade John Ross when he hasn't – he's not played well. I mean, and it – what are you going to get for that? I mean, what do you really think you're going to get to that? I guess to kind of go back a little bit. So I don't know how many times we have to talk about national reports and to not believe them. I take a lot of pride in that people will say to us, what do you know about this? Because I don't believe anything until you tell me. I take a lot of that's the most important thing to me. I want that to be how people think of us. And that's why we didn't say anything about this when it first came out, because the reaction we had heard before anybody even got up here from inside Bengals facilities was, this is complete, quite frank, bullshit. And it is not something that is happening. Now, they can say that, and it can be true, and they could be covering their own rears. However, they made it very clear once they did get up here to Indianapolis. And it was funny. So Duke Tobin was the first one up on the podium, and the small crowd gathers in front. You get a lot of national people are here. The first question, what about the John Ross report, right? And Duke kind of makes the joke, wow, right out of the jump, Howard's going right in. And he was prepared to go after it. Fairy tales? Fake news, ready, fire, aim, journalism. He went about anything that you can think of, went after it, and pointing out that they have never had internally or externally any discussions about trading John Ross. And that is not a thing that is going to happen. And that was from him. That was from Zach Taylor. And you can't get much higher than that as far as authorities on the subject.
Yeah, and you know, with John, you know, clearly the thing that happened against the Titans in 17, the Carolina thing in 18, I think John's received plenty of criticism, deservedly so, for some things that have happened on the field. But it does seem to me that, you know, we've experienced a lot of head scratching or talked about it, about the way he was or wasn't used in the offense last season. Maybe some of that had to do with the injuries, Andy Dalton going down, whatever. I don't think we've seen John Ross. Maybe I want to see how Zach Taylor, Brian Callahan might be able to get the most out of John Ross. And I think it, from the comments that Zach made and Brian made, that's what the plan is moving forward.
Yeah. So when we talk to Brian about how he sees John in his system, I mean, there was an excitement there about what he can be, and honestly, I felt like it seemed like. It's hard not to watch him last year and not be frustrated of how is this guy who's showing all kinds of separation in the red zone not being more productive or used more between the 20s. And there's some cleaning up of his game that's part of that. But I think that there's a thought that they can do that. And, you know, you can draw comparisons to lots of guys who were drafted high, started slow, and then really take off when they get into the right situation.
Yeah.
You know, so that happens all the time in this league. And John, I think, has been a bit – he has victimized himself mentally by the pressure that came from being a top 10 pick. I mean, those that follow his story and in our coverage, and Jim Ozarski wrote – a great story on him feeling he was almost – he went into depression during his rookie year. He wrote that before this last season even started. And then all of a sudden he's completely thrown under the bus when he quits in Carolina, and everyone's questioning him and this, that, and the other. And, you know, I think that there is a lot of hope that you can see the John Ross breakout, and – shopping him and selling him is not something that makes any sense to at least to anybody within the organization that I've talked to on or off the record here in Indianapolis or since that report came out.
Yeah. It is baffling, though. You have a guy, he's 5'11". He ran the fastest 40 in the combine history, 4.22. Last season, he only had three catches that went for more than 17 yards.
It's wild, yeah.
He averaged 10 yards per catch. His longest catch was 39 yards. So, you know, we kept saying, how about just let that guy run as fast as he can straight down the field?
Yeah.
How about take him from one side of the field and run him as far across to the other side of the field, see what he could do? And I, only a handful of times can I remember any of those things really happening.
And I think, you know, that is – why you have Zach Taylor and Brian Callahan and those guys here. And defenses play off on John Ross,
right?
Because he hasn't shown enough effectiveness in the 10 to 15 comeback range, or at least it wasn't thrown to him enough, or when it was, bad things happened, it seemed like, and his catch percentage was so low. He didn't prove that he could be effective enough at that. If he's effective at that, now people have to respect that and come up on it, and then you can blow by them. But until he fixes that part of his game, I think that's always going to be a problem. But that's not to say that isn't something that can't happen.
Right. Yeah, he does have the tag of he can't get open.
Right.
It felt like. And he did get opportunities. He had 15 targets the last three games of the season.
Mm-hmm.
And only had three catches out of that.
Yikes. Yeah, that's
sorry,
part
I didn't mean
of,
to.
Here's the other side of this. So the question becomes, who did leak this report? Because,
where did it come from?
Where did it come from? Because these things happen, and often it is, you know, some people that report nationally aren't always correct.
Surely not.
And the thing is, they also don't make stuff up out of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
So was this the agent? I mean, that would be the first place that you would point. This is an agent putting this out there to try to get his guy traded, right? Let me tell you one thing, if it was. And I get the impression it wasn't, or at least that's kind of being sold that way. That's from what I've heard. If you think you are going to bully Mike Brown in the media, you are dead ass wrong. It is going to end bad for you. He will ruin your life, okay? Because that is not something he will ever or has ever tolerated, no matter how much you are beloved by him or this fan base. Carson Palmer, Chad Johnson Ochocinco, even Andrew Whitworth got into this when he was talking about stuff after it came out, frustration of Cedric Obwehi and Jake Fisher being drafted when he was getting old. All of that, none of it works out. It doesn't matter who you are. Don't try that move. Now, it could have just been teams saying that, hey, when I called and talked about the Bengals, I brought up. Sure, you can bring up John Ross, and they can be receptive to it if you're offering an Amari Cooper deal. Look, there's nobody on this team I wouldn't give you for a first-round pick outside of a core nucleus of about three or four. So, yeah, if you call and you start talking about trading picks – you mentioned John Ross. I'm going to say I'm interested. Does that mean I'm shopping John Ross?
It does not.
How this stuff comes to be totally, I don't quite know. But I have not heard.
Well, and to that point, Duke even said that he didn't get any calls until after that report came out. And people were kind of sniffing around it, being like, what is this?
Yes.
Is he on the market?
I'm glad you mentioned that. Perfect time to mention that because I am going to bring in a little bit so you can kind of get a feel for what exactly was said. This is us on the side talking just with local media. Duke, he'd already multiple times addressed the fact that they were not doing anything, but we kind of dove back into the conversation towards the end, and there was some good stuff in here. So here's a little bit of Duke Tobin talking about the fact that they are absolutely unequivocally not shopping John Ross.
When a report surfaces like it did with John, is that something you just let roll off, or does that bother you? Do you have to go to damage control? Do you have to call him?
No, I don't do much damage control. You know, if I'm asked about it, I'll respond with honesty. So, you know, I don't know where that came from. You know, it could come from 100 different people. But what qualifies as news these days sometimes is just made up fairy tales. So That certainly doesn't qualify as news, in my opinion.
If it is something that, like, as you say, was not true, do you reach out to the player and let him know?
Yeah, I think sometimes you do. I think the player a lot of times will reach out to you or the player's agent, you know, if they're not the ones that put it out. I don't know. I don't know. But we try to be open and honest with our players. And if there is a chance that we're going to be, you know, trying to move somebody, we try to give the heads up, you know, to the guy so he's not blindsided.
Do you think he's capable of still reaching that potential that made him a first-round pick?
We're not going to give up on him, yeah. You know, there are a lot of flashes almost on a daily basis in practice. You know, he's got to stay healthy, and he's got to keep building on you know, his good plays. And confidence will be a huge part. We'll have a new offensive scheme, and we'll see how he transitions. But every receiver is going to have a transition. Every receiver is going to have a learning curve. But no, there's nobody giving up on him yet.
I know you guys said y'all haven't talked about trading him, but did any teams reach out about him? And
no, I think teams reached out about the report about him. No.
But you hadn't heard from anybody before that, I guess, is what you're saying.
I don't know the timing of it. I don't know when the report was and when the calls were. Yeah. But, you know, normally when there's a report like that, there is some interest in finding out whether it's true or not. I make those calls too when there's reports.
I guess you told them.
And then people probably think I'm the one that put the report out.
But I guess when they called, but when teams called, you said no.
I answered just the way I answered earlier, Butchie. It's not something that's in our plans.
Yeah, so there you hear Duke. I mean, and it's, you know, fairy tales, and it's, yeah, I've made those calls before. I mean, sure, when you hear a report, and that's just it, these things can totally, 95% of the stuff you hear right now is fictional and agenda driven of trying, you know, maybe somebody's trying to drive up a market for another receiver, mm-hmm. and points out, well, they're talking about trading this guy or that, you know, and you never know how this stuff happens, but usually it's obviously someone somewhere with an agenda. The only people I can tell you that it definitely wasn't, that's anybody inside of one Paul Brown Stadium. And I believe that because the best sources I have on and off the record have been adamant and clear about that. And
yeah, well, the way Duke came out so emphatic about this, I mean.
Because how big of a fool would they look like if then they traded John Ross in a week?
Right. Well, right. But then as we ask questions about other players, like say Vontaze Burfict, the answers become, well, we're just going to have to evaluate. We got to get our full staff in here.
Look, I'm not going to do it again.
I was subtly trying to push.
You're
toward
trying.
The ramp.
You're trying to make me do this again. I should just have the one that I did. I got it very succinct last time, down into like 3 minutes.
Practice makes permanent.
Let me just tell you, it has a feel that the last rites have been read. It's just a matter of time. I mean, the when the answers to those questions is, we'll evaluate that our staff hasn't fully gotten together, which is true. I mean, Lou Anarumo and his staff, I mean, as we record this, even though we know who it is, I mean, the defensive linebackers, coaches haven't even been announced yet. So to think that they would be making moves right now is they would wait to get the official, all right, let's have this official conversation, you know, but it's over. I'll say it. It's over.
Yeah, going to be a lot of moves in that position group.
Yeah, the roster's going to churn, and again, as I've written and said, there's no side of it that makes sense that Vontaze Burfict stays on this team going forward, and I think that is the sense that I think that you'll have, and I expect it to be swift. I just do.
Yeah.
Just because it's so obvious and it's something that you need to nip in the bud. And look, they know the linebacker position is a complete train wreck. They know. So they've got to approach it and start fixing it. And it starts with getting rid of the fat. I didn't mean it to be like that, but it's kind of ironic. Cutting the fat.
Mm-hmm.
Cutting the often fat.
Yeah, this isn't going to be a trim at linebacker, I believe.
No, the position as a whole, not talking about going beyond Burfict, feels like a complete gutting. outside of probably Nick Vigil. I mean, Jordan Evans and Malik Jefferson, I think, certainly will stay and see if they can filter up, if you will. But after that, I think if I had to say right now, I would predict three prominent new faces in the linebacker room by the time all is said and done. Now, where they come from is yet to be seen. One free agent, two free agents, two draft picks, all draft picks, first round draft pick. I don't know. We don't know that yet. But my prediction is, by the time you get to training camp in late July, we are going to have Nick Vigil, Malik Jefferson, Jordan Evans, and insert three other names there, one of which is going to probably be your three-down linebacker, whether it's K.J. Wright or Jordan Hicks or Quan Alexander or Devin White. Mm-hmm. I get the feeling that they are intent on aggressively attacking that linebacker position this offseason.
Yep. Can we
I actually have Duke talking about the linebackers.
Yeah,
so
plug that in.
So I'll go ahead and plug that in because you had nothing You had nothing.
I wanted to segue to something else, but I think we might be able to.
All right. Let me bring in Duke Tobin talking about linebackers and his non-answer on Vontaze Burfict. So here's Duke Tobin.
You talked in the past, last year specifically, about free agency versus the draft. Where's it strong? And that kind of forced you to, allowed you guys to make the move you did last year with Cordy and everything. Linebacker, do you view, because a lot of people say, oh, this draft is not super deep at linebacker, but maybe free agency is a little stronger. How do you view those two as far as linebackers go?
I think this draft does offer a decent amount of linebackers. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I'm not down on the depth of this draft at that position. I think that free agency also offers some good linebackers. And free agency is harder to predict than the draft. You kind of know the range where you have to pick a guy in the draft. If you've done your homework, you kind of know. With free agency, you don't know if you're going to get an opportunity or not. You don't know what level that opportunity is going to be. And you don't know what opportunities you have to forgo if you go too high, over here. And so that's a little bit of a moving target. But we're certainly looking at it. And there's guys that are good players that we'll have to consider.
Do you look at that position after last year as something that really needs a pretty significant overhaul?
I think we do have a couple, two, three, four young players that can come on and have good seasons. Again, the health of our team, we're 4-1, and you just injury after injury after injury after injury, and we just couldn't overcome it, and that position group got devastated with injury, so it didn't ultimately look like we thought it was going to look when we first started out. There will be change in that position group. There'll be additions to it.
Where are you at with Vontaze right now?
What do you mean, where am I at?
Are you comfortable going forward with him on this team? Do you like him still on this team?
Oh, we'll have ongoing discussions as we go on the fit there. Again, our defensive staff just walked in the building, a large part of it. We'll have a new linebacker coach probably announced tomorrow. We'll have a new D-line coach probably announced tomorrow. The coordinator, Lou, is new to the building. So those are all questions that we'll answer as we go. But for me to sit here and answer for them right now and proclaim something, I don't think is the way to go.
All right, so there was Duke Tobin talking about linebackers in the room, non-answer on Vontaze Burfict, and off we go. You said you had something.
I wanted to get into Jim Turner.
Oh, you're itching for this
I am,
one.
Dude.
You're itching for this one. So we get our first opportunity to talk to Jim Turner today. And obviously, as a quick recap on how we got here, I'd say the most controversial move in Zach Taylor's month-long, his first month on the gig, was hiring Jim Turner, who was a part of the Miami bullying thing, scandal, whatever, was fired from there for that, and then ended up landing back at Texas A&M, and he was suspended for a couple of weeks there for some inappropriate humor on some slides, and But he stayed. Jimbo Fisher kept him on. Turner was over 2 years. Kevin Sumlin fired. He's one of a few coaches that Jimbo kept on for this past year. And then when Zach Taylor got the head coach job, Turner told us today, this was pretty much the only job I would have left. This is the only reason I ever would have left Texas A&M, as he viewed it as one of the top five offensive line coaching jobs in the country, but to be under Jimbo Fisher in the SEC. All of that said, leads us to today and his first chance to really speak out about Zach Taylor standing up for him and all the other things that went along with that. Would you like for me to play the audio first, or are you still itchy?
Well, no, yeah, we can play the audio, but I just want to say that after 30 minutes with Jim Turner,
yeah,
I totally understand why he would be somebody's guy, why you would want him to be on your staff. Why I also think Jim Turner is not made for Twitter. He's not made for 140 characters, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
You can't just take like one or two of his sentences and frame an opinion, I think. And that's honestly, you can't really do that with anybody.
No.
But there's going to be some things that Jim Turner might say now or later that would be very easy to criticize if you're only getting the bite. But if you listen to his whole answers, I totally understand why Zach wanted to go back to bat with for somebody that he's been around for in multiple jobs at multiple levels. And so let's play the clip, and then maybe we can get into it.
I agree with you. I will add on to that. He has a very definitive persona that he owns to the nth degree. I am an Irish Catholic from Boston who is a former Marine, and that is me. And I'm in my 50s, and that's me. When you think of Irish Catholic Marine, Jim Turner is the embodiment of that in a football coach, and it's probably why he coaches the offensive line and why some of the stuff that's happened has followed him. So keep that in mind as you listen to this little bit of Jim Turner talking about some of that stuff.
Why do you think that you have fit so well with Zach over the years? Why has that worked so well with your guys?
Well, I think contrary to public opinion, I am probably one of the easiest guys to work with in the world. So in the office, when it comes to putting it together, okay, so when you're in that type of group, so you're in a group of probably five or six guys that are going to put a game plan together. And if you're not willing to bend, if you're not willing to give, if you're not willing to listen, then it's not going to work. And you can put six of the greatest coaches in the world together, and if the six of them all listen to each other, you're going to come out with a mess. And so it's got to be chemistry in that group. And so when you say, like, how do we fit together, I've worked with him. And so when me and him are in a room together, thoughts come together and they gel together. And that's all I know. It's just pure chemistry.
I guess that made it kind of a no-brainer that you would want to come with him here when he came here. Was that always on your mind? The second you thought he could have a head job, it was like, I will go with him in a heartbeat no matter what. Yeah.
Yeah, so he called me on the phone and said, hey, would you be interested? And I was like, you had me at hello, brother.
That's great.
I was just gonna piggyback on you said, Paul, about the college, the transition to college, to the pros. What about the body type of guy? Are you looking? I mean, is it a different? I mean, obviously it's a different type of guy, I guess, because they're bigger here. But has in the 10 years or so, has the body type changed? Has the characteristics changed?
Not for me. So, like, if you look at my history at Texas A&M, I brought in Luke Jokel, I brought in Jake Matthews, I brought in Cedric Abue, I brought in Jermaine Ifedi. All of them are 325, 330-pound men. They're enormous. And to me, the thing that I always struggle with is, okay, a guy can run around in the combine, he can do everything, he can look great, and he can be the best athlete in the world. But if he can't take that beating, if he's going to get hurt in the second game, what good is that? And so I spend a lot of time with that thought in mind. I want big, wide people. And like my time in Miami, I had John Jerry, I had McKinney, I had some enormous people, Richie Incognito. I had enormous, wide-bodied people with 335 pounds. Just running around them would take you 3 seconds. So that's a big part of it, and they don't get hurt. Like my line that I just left at A&M, I had Dan Moore playing left tackle. He was a sophomore. He's 332 pounds. My left guard was Jared Hawker. He's 328 pounds. And they don't get hurt. Like Dan waited through the whole year. Hawker makes it through the whole year. They don't get hurt. You know, I've had other guys start for me at A&M that are 295, 300 pounds, and they don't make it through five games. So, and there's a physicality there as well, you know, and those guys are that big. And there's a reason that Mike Tyson doesn't fight Roberto Duran, okay, because he's much bigger, so it's not going to be a good fight. Yet they're both great fighters, you know, so it's just a difference in size, that's all.
Does it say a lot about Zach and also the relationship between you two that he's kind of, you know, willing to stand on the table for you right after Miami? He wanted to bring you to Cincinnati and joked that you kind of spurned him for A&M. But, yeah. You know, it's clear, you know, how much he believes in you.
Yeah, I was out the door. It was a quick exit. I'll tell you why, though. Because I had a chance after my situation in Miami, I had a chance to get back. So I didn't have a line job. So I was out of work for 2 years, and then I was going to come back as the running back coach at UC. And then, and I had told everybody, including the head coach, Coach Tuberville, I had said, listen, if I ever get a chance at an NFL offensive line coaching job or a major college in the SEC or one of the major conferences, I hope you guys would understand if I took that. And everybody was in agreement that it would make sense for me to take that. If I didn't take that, I wouldn't be sitting here today. So, It was a good move for me, and a move that I needed to make. No, I appreciate Zach. You know, whenever you take these jobs, or any job for that matter, at some point when you're trying to make the thing right, you're going to have to stand on the table for somebody. And I appreciate him doing that. And I know he knows me to the core, so I know that he knows that I'll come in here and do the right thing and do a good job.
What did you take away from what happened in Miami? What did you feel like you learned something from that, or did you? What was your biggest takeaway from what happened there?
Here's what I know. So, I'm an Irish Catholic from Boston. All right, I was a lieutenant in the Marine Corps. A lot of what I grew up with in my home, and a lot of what I experienced in my time through college and coaching and in the military, I use humor a lot to make my point. And when you're talking to a group of men, you really have to see, you know, what's the situation? Like, who are you speaking to? You guys know that better than anybody. And so when I'm standing in a room filled with Marines, okay, it can be harsh and it can be direct as to what you want them to do. You need to make your points. I don't see the NFL speaking to an offensive line in the NFL isn't much different. And so there are some things said sometimes that wouldn't come out right if the average citizen that just walking down the street was to listen to it. And unfortunately, some of the things that I said and some of the things I did with my players had come out. And so moving forward, I just have to be smart about what I do when I'm going to try and use entertainment to motivate the players.
I enjoy the definitive nature of, contrary to popular belief, I am the easiest person in the world to work with. That's,
yeah. Usually,
let me tell you how great I am and how easy I am to work with.
Now, if you have to say out loud that you're easy to work with, we probably aren't going to be able to work together.
I drive a Dodge Stratus. That's all I think of when I hear that.
Yeah, I remember that my first day on the job here with you, you told me, you made it very clear, like, listen, I don't know what you've heard.
I don't know what you've heard, but I'm the easiest person to work with.
I am the most fluid podcaster out there. I got nervous real quick after that.
Yeah, because you don't want to hear that. But it all makes a little more sense, in, I think, in this context. Now, was he apologetic? No.
He's not going to be.
He's not going to be.
That's not who he is.
No. He is of the opinion that his humor was meant for behind closed doors and not meant to be seen by those that aren't in an offensive line room. And let's be honest. These guys are very unique individuals who are much like Marines and are much like a frat house.
Well, yeah.
Does that excuse?
It doesn't make it right.
No, it does not make it right. But that is how he approaches dealing with the offensive linemen.
And when you stack up, 10 or 11 or 12 of these personas, you've mentioned that Jim is Jim, but there's 10 of these other guys, too, that have their own persona, and they have to have that persona to go out on Sundays and be successful. Things are said, things are done that if you're outside of the room, obviously you're going to say, this is wrong, this isn't right. But that right and wrong doesn't matter in Jim's world.
Yeah. No, exactly. So, yeah.
And he's not going to apologize for that. And at this point,
won't.
And I think it comes down to his job is to get his guys ready on Sunday. And he's not going to be – I don't think he's going to be knocked off track of how he likes to go about doing that by if people outside of the locker room are offended.
Correct.
That doesn't make it right or wrong, but we're not in a – this isn't a right or wrong thing as it relates to what
he is rough around the edges.
Right.
He is not for the faint of heart. He is an old school, this is how we do it, I have my code that I abide by, and it's probably not meant for a PC world.
I will say,
it could get Zach Taylor in trouble.
Right.
Still, because that's clearly going to be something where he's going to unapologetically be rough around the edges. Because that's how he gets the most out of those guys. And that makes sense. In that world, that has and does work.
But this, and that comes down to tolerance, risk management. I mean, he's been around Mike Sherman.
Related.
The Callahans.
Mm-hmm.
He knows offensive line coaches. This is the guy he wanted.
Yeah.
Or had to have.
And look, let's be honest. I mean, he recruited – he picked out and recruited a line of very good and first-round pick offensive linemen to Texas A&M. Where do you go with German Efetti, even Cedric Obwehi, who did play well at Texas A&M, well enough to be a first-round pick, Jake Matthews. I mean, you go down this line of people he found, developed, took ownership over, produce very good players. So at a high level, I mean, at SEC kind of became an offensive line school partly because of his time there before and after his Miami time. So there's other stuff. So are we done with his character or do you have another, you have more?
I think, here's what he needs to apologize for.
What?
His comments about a right tackle.
Yeah, that's where I was going to go next.
Okay.
There's a couple things, and there is, I think if you are looking to get football here, now we can sort of talk about the players a little bit and how this team is going to fix their right side of the offensive line. I think we can pinpoint what a Jim Turner guy looks like. And really what I think Brian Callahan agrees with as the son of an offensive line coach. I always get nervous saying the son of anything because people think I'm about to – I've already cursed twice in this episode.
Yeah, you got $2 in the bucket.
I don't know why, but I feel like sometimes you've got to be – you know what you got to be? You got to be emphatic.
Well, cuss words really get the point across, I've always found.
Yeah, and my language is filtering up these days.
I hear you.
Yeah.
No, contrary – to public opinion.
Yeah.
Bobby Hart is phenomenal.
He's phenomenal, yes. Also a thing that Jim Turner said, which actually it reminded me of, and we were speaking a little bit about this before we started recording, on the Chappelle Show when Rick James is doing his whole actual Rick James bit, talking about, oh, what do you mean? You think I would actually do that? And then in the same breath says, yeah, I did that. At the same, that's basically what happened where he said, well, Bobby Hart, I can't comment on that, and then proceeds in the same breath to comment
about
for
it.
About a minute and a half on how he thought Bobby Hart was phenomenal and loved his passion and loved his attitude. And, yeah, there were probably some pressures and penalty issues, you know,
Here's the Jim Turner talking points for it's like, hey, here's how you can win over Bengals Twitter, right? Just own up for the Miami thing. Just say you're really sorry it all happened.
Yeah.
Didn't do that. Nope. Okay, that's fine. Do not compliment Bobby Hart.
Ever.
Do not do it. Don't do it.
He didn't compliment Alex Redmond.
That's true. He didn't mention
Didn't even mention. He just skipped over him.
You got two out of three. Say something good about Christian Westerman.
No, didn't
do that.
Didn't even come up.
But to it's like, it's cool if you want to say, yeah, you know, Bobby, he did a few things right, did a few things wrong. You drop a phenomenal in there.
Yeah, don't drop the phenomenal.
Mm-mm. Nothing about that right side of the line was phenomenal.
And inevitably, it won't matter if Bobby Hart doesn't come back. I mean, here's the thing about the Bengals right now. I mean, they have one tackle under contract. I mean, they have Cordy Glenn.
Right.
And so that position is going to be rectified as well.
I'm having some fun with this Bobby Hart thing. Obviously, what's a coach supposed to say about a guy? He's not gonna just throw him under the bus on the first day. But he doesn't have to use the P word.
Yeah, don't pee him.
Don't use the P word.
You got to be like that. Come on. Yeah, I mean, that is the good news, though. You know how you do win them over a little bit? You say Cedric Obwehi, you know, I wish him the best of luck.
Yeah, that's right.
Because people could say, well, he did
that's
coach
his guy.
Him.
That's his guy.
That's his guy. And he said, I wish him the best. So there's that, which we knew. I mean, Cedric told me as much. Mm-hmm. That he wishes the Bengals the best back in December when he was still a member of the team. So we know, don't freak out. So that, yeah, it's like a 50%. Hit about 50%.
Yeah, that's why I say Twitter ain't for Jim Turner.
No. And he's an offensive line coach. They're important. And that's all fine and good. He's not the head coach. He could make the head coach look very bad, but it's not like he's going to be in front of a microphone a ton. It's not like – certainly they don't want him to be, I would assume. It's just go in, do your job, make the offensive line play good, find a tackle that isn't Bobby Hart. That's how it should go.
I'm always surprised when people find out that the man whose job it is to get another 335-pound man to maul and be vicious and physical is a little rough around the edges.
It's a little rough around the edges.
Doesn't make it right.
All these O-line coaches are rough around the edges. That is what that job is. Well,
they all have a distinct persona that is based in alpha.
Intense alpha.
Yeah.
Yes.
Efficient alpha.
Yes. So when we talk about actual guys that the Bengals could draft and not start Bobby Hart, potentially, you can find them by looking for the fat guys. I mean, I thought that was really interesting of how clear Jim Turner was on what he views as a quality offensive lineman and particularly quality tackles, and that's big dudes. That's why Cordy Glenn should be safe, and I would assume if you're looking at who the Bengals might draft of the three or four guys that are sort of potentially could be there in the teens for the Bengals that are their potential right tackles, and it's actually a good spot for them to be in that case. There are some that they could get that will be – look for the fat ones, 330,
wide-bodied.
340, wide-bodied. Takes 3 seconds to go around them as Turner said. I mean, you look for that, and I think we've got a type. I always used to joke. I always knew Paul Alexander's type because I would just look at who
what
had the most bench press reps.
Oh, okay.
He loved guys that were strong, upper body strong, and could hold. So if you're looking for an interior lineman, find the most bench press reps and put them on the Bengals. And sure enough, there they would draft him in the fourth or fifth round or whatever, because that was something that he valued. I think if you look here, you might just need to look at the scales. And production on tape, obviously. But.
Yeah, basketball coach, enamored with 7'2" centers. I always found that interesting with the recruiting went in the college, like the college level. They always say, well, we like our cornerbacks to be 6 feet tall with long arms. I'm like, yeah, but I think in this case he was so precise in talking about. He kept saying like 332, 328. Yeah. Like there's a certain weight that it's got to be, or it's out.
Yeah, I would not be looking for 6'7", 305, 310, which very much exists.
Well, a guy that comes to mind like last year was like Isaiah Wynn, who was drafted mm-hmm. by the Patriots. You know, some people, you might want a guy that can play guard or tackle, have some versatility, a little bit smaller, but maybe more agile. And he made a few boxing references, Jimmy
Multiple Mike Tyson references.
Because he said, hey, Mike Tyson and Roberto Duran, both great boxers, totally a different weight class. You know, it's a different mm-hmm. fighter. So, but his preferred boxing style is Mike Tyson.
Yeah. I want to switch over to tight ends a little bit here, yeah. Sort of. We'll go from the line to the attached line or unattached line. I think how this gets handled is going to be one of the more interesting things to watch over the next, you know, we're coming on, you know, the new league year is only 2 weeks away now. As free agency gets into you know mid swing here, what do the Bengals end up doing at tight end? And so you're saying, oh man, they've got to get dynamic there, right? They've got to go find free agent market not super for tight ends this year. Draft super, it's deep. You're going to be able to get a tight end if you want one, particularly in the mid late rounds. Whereas the tight ends, you've got Jared Cook. Probably number one, but he's in his 30s. You have Tyler Eifert, who can't stay healthy, and we all know his story. Those are probably the top two tight ends in the market. Mm. And then all the Bengals tight ends are probably, you know, they all those guys are up. Interesting thing we heard from Brian Callahan in talking to him. I found this because we're still all trying to get a feel for what this system is going to be. They don't have the playbook yet. They don't know what the personnel is yet. They're still trying to figure out what exactly their playbook is going to be. But I thought this was interesting from Brian Callahan on tight ends in this system.
Talking about tight ends, I mean, it seems to be a pretty deep class for that position group. Yep. For the system that you guys like to run, is there maybe, I mean, everybody wants the guy that does both, but there's very few of those. I mean, is there more stress because of so much play action, so much run game focus, and having a guy that really can do both and not necessarily the, you know, the unattached, you know, big receiver type?
Yeah, we in Oakland last year when I was there, we had Jared Cook, who obviously is an extremely talented tight end, and he's a matchup problem for a lot of people. So the ability to move him around a formation was something that we emphasized. And you don't always have that guy, and you don't always need that guy either. So sometimes it's a luxury when you have someone that can go out there and mismatch against safeties and linebackers, and you know is going to win on third down, you know is going to win in the red zone. Those are always nice to have. I don't necessarily think you have to have that in today's NFL to be a good offense, and I think the Rams kind of showed that last year. I think with Higbee and Everett, those guys are both really solid players, but neither one of them is going to strike fear in anybody as a matchup problem. So I think when you find the tight ends that you have on your roster and or the ones that you accumulate, when you look at what they do, there's certain traits that they have to fit. They have to be able to do some things in the run game well enough. They have to do some things in the pass game well enough. So do they have to be great at either one? Not necessarily. So sometimes those great receiving tight ends may not always fit the system. And when you have one, you find ways to get them.
Yeah. The system morphs around the players.
Correct.
More so than, yeah.
Correct. And I don't think you have to have a dominant tight end to be a good offense in this league. It's
right.
Always nice to have one.
Yeah.
But I don't think you have to have a player that excels at just one thing. As long as you got a guy that can do a bunch of things well enough, I think you can have a productive tight end unit.
I found that really interesting from Brian Callahan talking about how, you know what? You really don't need a dynamic tight end to have a dominant offense. And we did see that in L.A. last year with them running three wides and a single tight end, and it's not like those tight ends were incredible when they were out there in that offense. Now, if you have one, it's great. I think everyone would admit if you have one, but they just need someone who can be serviceable, it almost sounds like, and be able to do everything well enough.
They have a guy like that.
They do CJ
already, and so you can supplement out with that. But I think Zach Taylor had some comments too, off to the side, mm-hmm. that were similar, because he was asked, like, "Are you going to be able to imprint an identity there at tight end? Are you something to that effect?" And he basically was like, "No, I think we'll be able to figure it out. It's not a priority." So
yeah, it sounds like that. I would say, in my opinion. Again, going back to where I think this nets out when all is said and done, when we're at camp, I think if you're reading the leaves on how this plays out, I think they get Eifert back. I think they get him on an incentive deal that was similar but probably cheaper because he has another injury. I think they can sell that. I definitely think CJ comes back. I feel like he is a great fit for what they want and what they're describing.
I know you're a big fan of Jared Cook.
I am. I don't think that's going to happen because for what we just discussed, mm-hmm. that dude's going to make some cash now. I mean, if you're the number one tight end on the market and there's a lot of value for tight ends elsewhere, someone's going to pay you even though you're in your 30s. And I don't think that they're willing to pay that position premium dollars when they don't view it as a need to have dynamic in order to have a great offense.
Right,
especially when you have A.J. Green and Tyler Boyd and Joe Mixon and running two back sets with Giovanni Bernard as well. And if you have Eifert, John, and you have C.J., and then you have a deep draft, so you can have Eifert, Uzama, draft pick, so what, third rounder, whatever, fourth rounder, wherever you find your value there in the mix, you know, you cannot – base your offense around Tyler Eifert. We know that. But if he's healthy and you've got him, you can use him in select packages. I would like to think that this group would be better at actually executing the strategy that last year's group said they would and then bailed on a couple games in because they wanted to play all the time, and then he got hurt week four. If you have those three guys, I think you feel good about what the tight end position needs to be if you're not feeling that you need to be ultra dynamic. But you definitely can be dynamic if Eifert's healthy. And C.J. Uzama can make plays and is good for the locker room and has good chemistry with Andy Dalton. And you have a pick that you can develop that fits your style. That, I mean, to me, to what they're describing, that outcome would fit them.
Sharpie. Slot it in. Write it in.
Sharpie.
Eifert.
Uzama. Draft pick. I'll go ahead and say fourth rounder.
All right.
Sharpie. Fourth round pick.
Sharpie.
Mark it down however many minutes we are into the Combine pod. You heard it here first. That's how it's going to end. And I told you the linebacker room already, too.
Yeah. We're well on down the road here. We might not have a right tackle name, but we've got his body.
And a 332-pound right tackle.
Wide-bodied tackle.
I think Taylor from Florida fits the bill, if we're going to go throw names out
there
on who you would be. And I know he's got an injury or whatever, but, I mean, I think his size, attitude, aggression, where he would go in this draft at 11, or even a Cody Ford from Oklahoma who's similar, fits.
You're already digging in.
I'm in now. I mean, we're here now.
Yeah.
It happens.
Your mock draft is filtering up.
My mock draft is showing up on Monday.
There you go. Wow, you heard it here first.
Yeah, I know. I enjoy this part. You know what I am happy about because of all the other stuff that has gone on is it's made sense to not overdo early jump into mock draft season for me, for us. And now, 'cause I like covering the draft. I say that I make this rant all the time. People think I don't. I love covering the draft. I love covering the draft for 2 months. I don't like covering the draft for 3 months or during the season.
Or 12 months.
Or 12 months. I mean, if that was my job, if you said you're an NFL draft guy, I that's fine. I don't need more than that to cover the draft.
Well, speaking of filtering up, I mean, this is filtering up from the lower ranks. I mean, recruiting never sleeps. There's such a demand for content about college recruiting. And now that's what the draft has become.
Yeah.
You've talked about the first time you were here at the Combine, there was a couple hundred people. A couple hundred scribes out in a concourse somewhere here in Indianapolis.
Lucas Oil.
And now it's like SEC Media Days here.
I know there's almost 2,000 credentialed media.
There's so much free food for me that I've been eating, and that's where I'm about to go now. So,
yeah. Are you trying to say something? You're hungry?
I'm always hungry, dude. I stay hungry.
You do stay hungry. What is happening today in Kanye?
Yeah, it's kind of a down week for Kanye headlines. This comes from a reputable news source, Yahoo.com. They write, Kim Kardashian and Kanye West mocked online for pretending to be poor.
When did they pretend to be poor?
Well, there's a photo they posted, Kim posted on her Instagram, mm-hmm. of Kanye having a normal breakfast, normal-looking breakfast in a fine-looking kitchen, but apparently the aesthetic they're going for is...
poor. What does a poor breakfast look like?
Or an abnormal breakfast? It looks like a bowl of mini wheats or something.
Dude, what is wrong with that? If I don't care how much money I have, I'm eating mini wheats.
I love mini wheats.
I just have the like Costco size box instead of the regular size box.
I feel like,
although really, if I'm poor, I should be getting the Costco size box.
Well, I've been trying to understand narrative building here this week. I've seen it in action a little bit, and there was such a pushback from the Kenny G thing that Kanye set up on Valentine's Day, which I had the question: who's playing for Kenny G on Valentine's Day?
Kenny G is busy every Valentine's Day.
I guess he understands he's going to be booked up.
That's a big day for him.
Yeah. So now they've bounced back from a Kenny G moment to trying to act normal with mini wheats.
Yes. Yes.
I'm about to go have some mini wheats.
All right. So that is us from the Combine here. And there will be much more, of course, coming to Sunday.com. Make sure you... check out all our content from Indy and throughout the weekend, and then of course the mock draft coming next week. As we do, so once we've gotten our first look at all these players, and I hope you realize that we just Nostradamus-ized the most important aspects of the Bengals offseason program.
Contrary to public opinion, you do know what you're talking about.
That means I don't, right?
That's right.
Damn it! I'm so perceptive. Contrary to popular opinion, I'm perceptive. Anyway, thanks everybody for listening to the BBP from the Scouting Combine Indy. It's been an absolute pleasure. We'll be back with you back on our normal schedule next week, so you can look for the BBP to drop more in that normal time slot. We were thrown off a little bit this week by the time demands here up in Indy. So anyway, thanks everybody for listening, and we'll talk to you later.